Welcome to Red Receipt, a podcast by Antidote, the email and SMS marketing agency by people who hate boring email. Red Receipt will explore how the brands we love were thought up, launched, and scaled in today's market, and the biggest lessons the founders have learned throughout the process, both personally and professionally. I'm super excited to have our first guest, founder, good friend, and now client of Antidote, Nikki Bostwick, on the show. Nikki is the founder of The Fullest, a wellness media platform who recently just launched a new product called the Saffron Latte. It's been fun to watch The Fullest gain some early success with the product, launching in retail partners like Goop, Moon Juice, Alfred, and Cafe Gratitude, to name a few. Nikki has an amazing story of how she came to launch The Fullest, and I'm excited to have her on the show.
Red Receipt. Hey everyone, welcome to the Red Receipt podcast by Antidote. My name is Sean Donovan, and I'm here with Nikki Bostwick, our first guest and the founder of The Fullest. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Nikki, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about The Fullest and how you got it started?
So I started The Fullest a few years back, and at first it was called Poppy and Seed, and it was because I was super passionate about wellness, and at the time I just thought it was a passion. What I realize now is that it was definitely some sort of disordered way of being, just disordered in the way that I ate and lived my life, because I was super neurotic about my health. And I had this education in business. I was super into starting my own business, so I had a general business education, but I realized after I graduated college that I didn't actually learn any specifics. So how was I going to start a company? I studied entrepreneurship. How are you going to start a company out of nothing? You don't even know anything about the industry you want to be in. So at that time, I knew I wanted a wellness business, but I didn't know what that looked like. And I was teaching yoga, and I went to culinary school for plant-based food, but it was just really general. And so I decided to kind of go all in and travel and learn about the different foods and the different things that I was passionate about. And it took me down like a crazy rabbit hole. At first, I thought I was going to start a food business, and which I obviously now it really did benefit me. But at the time, everyone thought I was crazy. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm super passionate about nutrition, so maybe it's a food business. So that was where culinary school came in, and I developed like a really crazy superfood ice cream line that I thought I was going to launch. And it was like vegan, raw superfood ice cream. And no one had had a business like that before. And it had crazy flavors. And my family's super supportive. So they were like, okay, awesome. This is great. I was up in Oregon at the time where I went to college. So we actually recently together went to this grocery store chain called New Seasons. But New Seasons came and found out about my product, and they were actually really interested in carrying it. But at the time, I knew I didn't want to live in Oregon, so I had to make that decision too. I was like, well, I don't really want to be in this state. I want to move back to California. So I'm going to move back to California and figure out how I'm going to launch this business in California. And then when I moved back...
Was this before or after you went to culinary?
So this was right after. So. Okay. I taught yoga in college, and then I thought maybe I'll start a yoga studio that has a cafe, a spa component, and a retail component, because I also loved, you know, just wellness products, CPG, or clothing in general, like yoga clothing in this case, but I was still into fashion. So I thought maybe I'll combine all three passions into one. That's something that I already know about. So it's not like I have to go learn about a new industry, because again, I didn't have any knowledge of a different industry and I didn't want to work for anyone else. And so I went and had this product that I developed in culinary school that I then took a course called Getting Your Recipe to Market. And that was how I got hooked up with New Seasons, because I took the course of, okay, now I have this formulation. How do I actually go through all the stages that I need to go through in order to actually bring this to people?
Where did you find that course?
It was in Portland.
Was that like at a school that you were already going to?
No.
Or something you just found?
It was like a random thing I found. I don't even know how I found it, but online you just like research stuff. And I came upon that. And at the time, I had graduated from college. I moved here to California just to go to my raw food program, culinary program. But my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, was living in Oregon still. So I was like, oh, well, I'll just go, you know, live in Bend with him, because I was already technically living with him. I hadn't totally moved out to move to California. I was just planning on being here for a few months, moving back there. And then I found this program and I would commute to Portland. I lived in Bend, Oregon. I would commute to Portland once a week and I would take this class. And I learned so much in the class. But like I said, I knew I didn't want to start a business in Oregon. I love my family. I'm Persian and I have a really big family in California and I just wanted to be near them. And so once that happened, I told my boyfriend, I'll see you in California. He was from California as well. So we both knew we were going to move here. And he just had like a few months left in school. So he stayed up there. I came down here to start focusing on what I thought was the business I was going to build. And then once I got back here, I moved in with my dad. And I, you know, you just move back after college and you're trying to figure out what you're doing with your life. Like, and I think when you first set out to start a business, it's intimidating and super overwhelming. And so I started getting all in my head about if I was the right person to start this business, if I actually had what it took to start my own company.
And was this after you developed the whole product line and the store, the chain of grocery stores already had been interested?
Yeah.
So did you turn that
down? Yeah, because we were in talks and they were super interested, but nothing was set in stone.
Yeah.
It's not like I had a purchase order because I didn't have a co-packer yet. So I hadn't gone that far. I just had like basically what the packaging was going to look like, what was in it. I was not totally there yet. So it was enough for me to have room to be like, okay, I'm going to start it down there. If New Seasons is interested, then I already know someone down there is going to be interested. But my price point was super high. That was another thing that was difficult. At the time, the only thing that, you know, would justify a price point like that to me in this sort of industry, I mean, this was ice cream, but like I compared it to kombucha. When kombucha first came out, it was super expensive for people, but they just adapted to it. And for me, my ice cream was going to be $15 for a pint. And nowadays, I mean, it's still expensive, but not for the ingredients that I'm using. I mean, I now buy $15 almond butter, $20 almond butter. That's like way smaller, right?
Yeah, so the whole industry has kind of changed.
Yeah. But at the time, it was still, I couldn't wrap my head around it. And then so what happened was my dad is an entrepreneur. And he was like, okay, well, I'll help you. Like, he really believed in me from the get-go. He's always believed in me. And so he was like telling me, okay, well, here are your options. Like, you can either go the route of going to a store like New Seasons or Whole Foods, or if you're nervous about price point, you can start your own actual shop. And then it's a lower price point and you control it and you don't have to deal with distribution. And so we were going back and forth trying to figure out what's the best thing for this company. But
and by this point, did you have anyone else involved outside of?
No. So I had a crazy like nutrition education because I was super obsessed with being vegan. I was vegan at the time. And then I went to culinary school for the raw program. So I was like really well versed in that whole plant-based industry. And then while this was all happening, so my company name was Wild Craft Creamery. I like actually forgot about it until I just said it out loud. And it was so wild because all this stuff is happening. My dad is just believes in me so much. So he finds like a few stores that are available for lease in Laguna Beach. And he's like, let's lease it. Like, let's do it. And I was like, absolutely not. Like, I can't do this. And so he was just like even more, not, he wasn't forceful, but I think he knew as an entrepreneur, he knows what it's like to start your own business and have cold feet. And I think he was just trying to encourage me. But the more he would encourage me, the more I questioned myself because I was wondering, well, why? I have everything I could possibly want as a new entrepreneur. I have someone who's willing to front the money, who totally believes in me. I don't have to worry about that. I have all the creative, every possible decision making I wanted, I had, and I could just do it my way, but something just wasn't right. And at the time, I just thought that it was because maybe I was nervous about starting a business in Laguna because I thought there's not enough traffic in Laguna to support it. So I was nervous about that. And so I started looking into Venice as an option. And while that was happening, I remember because exactly when it was like MLK weekend in 2014. And I was staying at home and someone tried to break into my bedroom in the middle of the night. And my dad happened to be home. He was always traveling for work. He was like never around on the weekends or like beginning of the week. And so the night before, and I am the type of person, I never lock my doors. I always forget to close the garage door. My door to my like car is always unlocked. The key's in there. Like I'm super trusting of living in Laguna Beach. And I just never even had a key to my house. So all of this stuff I never thought someone would try and break in. So the night before, all of this, the doors and everything were open. And then luckily this night, my dad actually was in town. Everything was locked. And I had a sliding glass door into the bedroom I was staying in. And someone tried to open the sliding glass door. And I was awake researching like on my phone, on my computer. And I saw it happen. And my dog was staying with me at the time. And there was a doggy door to go outside. And so I knew with the way she reacted that she understood what was going on. She went outside. So I just screamed so loud. And from that moment, I couldn't stay in that house again, even during the day. It terrified me to be home alone. And it was so crazy because like a few days before I was like, I really need a sign. Like I was just talking to myself driving in the car and I was like, what is going on? Why can't I just pull the trigger on this company? I need a sign. I don't know what to do with my life essentially. And then that happened. And then somehow I loved going on retreats at the time. Like I would go on yoga retreats. I would go on any sort of travel retreats because I didn't like traveling by myself. I would usually travel with my boyfriend and he couldn't travel with me. So I found a way to kind of travel by myself with other people that were like-minded, but that I could still do my own thing. So I found a retreat in San Diego that was just kind of like a wellness thing. And I was like, okay, I'm leaving for a week because I can't stay alone in this house and we don't have an alarm system or anything. So while that was getting set up, I decided to leave and I met a lot of people on that trip, one of which was this woman who realized that I was super into all this wellness stuff and super knowledgeable. And so she approached me and we became friends and she said, hey, I've been considering starting a business, a website. So she said to me, hey, like there are a lot of really cool websites out there. There's Goop, there's, you know,
was Goop already around at that point?
It was, but it had just launched, really. I mean, she had launched it a while before. Like, I think she launched in 2008 or something, but it hadn't become like commercial really until that point. It was just getting started. And she said, hey, I noticed you know a lot about nutrition. Everything we've learned in class, you already knew about. And everyone would come up and ask me questions. So they really noticed that I knew what I was talking about. and that I was super passionate about all this stuff. And so she really was the one that put this idea of starting a website in my head. And at the time I was really focused on the ice cream thing. So I didn't think that I could ever make a career out of having a website. I didn't understand how that worked. There was a website called Mind Body Green that's still around. Have you ever been on that website? It's really great. It has a lot of information. But I noticed that at that time, Mind Body Green had really took off. And the
What is Mind Body Green? Is it like a
It's
platform,
just like a health
like
and wellness
education?
Art, like content platform. Okay. And they have articles and they also teach classes on there. And actually they recently now have their own products, which is, you know, the way that the industry is going now. But at the time I didn't know anything about websites. I didn't, and I still don't think that I'm the expert on that, but I also don't like writing and I'm not an avid reader by any means, but I definitely was so into reading about wellness that I knew that I could do it. So anyway, she approached me. We became fast friends. We hung out like all the time. She lived in Venice. And so I would commute and I ended up moving there because I'd already thought about moving there for my ice cream company. And then when she approached me, it just made sense. And so I told myself I would just do it on the side and see how it goes, but that I was going to continue to move forward with the ice cream company. And then once I started really getting my mind wrapped around the potential of that business, I knew that I couldn't move forward with the ice cream company because I noticed that there were just too many limitations for me in terms of the distribution and just like the having a frozen product. It felt to me like I couldn't think how I would expand it quickly. And also there were a lot of products coming out at the time. So in Venice, Kippy's Ice Cream had opened right around that time, which was essentially the same exact thing that I would have done. And I became friends with the owner and I loved her. And I just felt like, you know what, she's already doing it. It might not be the aesthetic that I would do, but it's like that wholesome product that I felt was missing that is now out on the market. And so I didn't like totally put it aside, but I started focusing more on the website. She and I started kind of networking and building things out. But then, you know, we came up with the name Poppy and Seed. But soon after that, I realized that we should not be business partners and we went our separate ways. But I bought essentially the website off of her before we even launched. So we broke up before I even took the website
live.
How
long did you guys work on the website and brand before even launching?
I would say we worked together for like 6 months. I mean, it wasn't that long, but for me, that felt like...
It's a long time.
Yeah, it was a long time. And we didn't know what we were doing. So we were also just learning and trying to find someone to design the website, someone to develop it. What's the name going to be? Why are we even doing this? So there was a lot that we worked on, but you know, I mean, it's so funny how things happen. And I always look back on that time in my life. And I think about how the person breaking into my house was a catalyst for me to move out and like continue on with my life. Cause it was just so much easier for me to like live at home and say no to doing anything. And then this person who came into my life, who was only my business partner for like 6 months, she completely changed the way that I thought about starting a wellness company. And so even though we went our separate ways, and I always wonder why that, I wondered for a little bit like why that happened. I just knew that she came into my life so that I could see what other ways I could build a career. And then so I started Poppy and Seed, but again, I was still so set in my ways about what to eat and how to be. And I was very regimented about my wellness routine because I used to I mean, not that I used to, I still have ADD, but I was diagnosed with ADD and I was taking Adderall years before and I was on hormonal birth control and I was on medication and I didn't want to be on prescription medication. So I had found a way to get off of the medication by controlling what I ate. And so that seemed to me like it was the answer to all my problems, but really I was way too controlling. I was super neurotic and that was isolating me. If I didn't have my boyfriend, I probably would have just been like stuck in my room and not wanting to go out and not see anyone. But luckily my boyfriend is very balanced and like he was supportive of me doing whatever I wanted, but he wasn't like trying to fit into my little box either. So always kept me open and expanded.
So do you feel like Poppy and Seed helped you or in a way like encouraged you to stay within your...
Poppy and Seed definitely was like my way of staying in my little bubble. But as I met this doctor who really helped me because I was still like, I wasn't fertile. After I got off birth control, I still didn't have my period. I wasn't fertile. So I went and saw this doctor and he completely changed my life. Dr. Sadeghi, I've told you about him. And he's just an amazing person that really looked at my blood work and was able to see what was going on because he believes that you can change your blood by also changing your mental health. And so I did like a program with him where he was like my therapist, but also I did a lot of nutritional therapy. But the first day I went to see him, he said, I need you to completely forget everything you've learned about nutrition because you know too much. Like you're taking it to another level and I want you to just go home and I want you to eat everything. But he knew that, like he's the type of doctor that tells people like, don't eat gluten, don't eat GMOs. Fish has a lot of mercury in it. I mean, he tells most people that come into his practice to stay away from like soy and allergens and stuff. But he knew to me, he shouldn't say that. And he said the complete opposite. And that was just life-changing for me because, well, I looked into like, why did I have to allow someone else to empower me to eat a certain way? Why couldn't I do that from the beginning for myself? But I had just gotten so set in my ways, I couldn't see that it actually wasn't helping me. I just associated the food with helping me with the ADD and stuff, but it obviously wasn't because I wasn't fertile. So anyways, him just saying that, what it did was open me up. And as soon as I started forgetting about controlling my food and trying to control everything in my life, that's when I started realizing that I missed out on so much because I studied business, which is like such a general basic education. I didn't learn about all the fun stuff like art history and politics and all the things that you could go to college and really dive into. I just learned about like accounting, and that doesn't expand your just who you are as a person. I mean, it's cool that I know that for my business, but like it wasn't that interesting. And so what I'm saying is it made me realize that I wanted to be a more involved citizen in the world. I wanted to be more involved in culture. I wanted to understand everything, but I had spent years of my life just learning business and health. And that seemed boring to me. And I realized that wellness doesn't mean just what you eat or maybe the practice of movement that you choose to do that day. It means so much more. It means your relationships that you have in your life, like getting together and literally eating bread with olive oil and eating pasta and having a glass of wine. Like those things also bring people joy and create happiness. And that's a form of wellness. So Poppy and Seed really helped me. It helped me because it just what got me started. Another thing was I knew when I took over Poppy and Seed that it wasn't a reflection of what I wanted, but I am a perfectionist, or I used to be. And so I knew if I didn't get started, I would never start anything. So I knew I had to buy the website from my partner because if I was the one that didn't buy the website, I would have not started any business and I would have been
buying the
again.
Website almost was like a
commitment.
Yeah. Or like a little hack of like that in a way you didn't have to jump to start it. You could just buy it from what you had already done.
Exactly.
And then you had like the starter set up that you could then go on.
Exactly.
And get over the mm-hmm. initial jump.
So yeah, it kind of helped me figure out what works, what doesn't work, what do people like. And I didn't like the branding or the name or whatever, but I learned so much about myself.
How long did you keep Poppy and Seed?
So
the name and brand, or was it like initially when you launched, you kind of knew from going to Dr. Sudeikis and doing these other things that you wanted to change the identity and the direction of the brand?
It took about a year, which is crazy. I mean, I started
Were you working on it the entire for that year, or was it?
I knew from the beginning, right? So we launched like May or June. I think it was like June 16th. We launched Poppy and Seed.
And what year was this?
So I launched 2015. And then I knew I didn't want to do it, but
I think most people think that they would just meet you. I mean, even me, I meet you and I know you pretty well. And almost automatically, I assume that things happen pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, like you've been doing generally the same path or finding the path for a long time.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It takes a long time to build something.
Yeah. And people don't realize that.
Yeah. Like essentially if anyone met you now, they probably all, like anyone you even interview on your podcast, they probably all think like, oh, she has the fullest, she has a product, a full product line. Like, I wish I could have that. And then they don't realize that you've been doing this for years and years and years.
Yeah. It's been a long time. And a long time to consider if it's right. Or, you know, like just asking yourself or second guessing yourself. But at the same time, just knowing that, I don't know. I wonder what it's like for other people. So I think it's really fun to interview other people.
Yeah.
But for me, it just so happens that I really believe in science. And so I remember questioning myself like around the time I was launching it. And I had a crazy dream with this woman that I really look up to. And she was in the dream. And she said, like, you're totally on the right path. Just keep going. And I mean, it was a really wild dream. I just remember that part stuck so deeply. I was in Santa Barbara. I had signed up to run a half marathon, and it was like the night before the half marathon, I had the craziest dream I've ever had. And I knew from that moment that I am going to stay on this like 100%.
Regardless of if you change the brand or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean that I can't change things.
Yeah.
Evolve. But I know that this is the business that's for me. And I know that I'm going to stick to it and I'm going to make it work.
So then when you were changing the brand or working on the branding for the fullest, did you have like a vision of creating a product line? Like, did you have
always
a vision of, so you knew from the beginning?
Yeah, I always knew. So,
but in a way, I mean, it's been years since you rebranded. Mm-hmm. Like, it's interesting to me how patient in certain ways you've been to find a product that you actually wanted to make. Like, most people would rush.
Just make whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know if that's true either, but I think most people would rush.
I mean, I wanted to because I'm the type of person that likes to just rush and like get it done. But the way that things worked out, I couldn't be that way. Like, it took me, now that I really remember, it took me a year from the moment I decided to rebrand the Fullest or Poppy and Seed to the Fullest. It took a year. I didn't have a name, so it took several months to get the name down, which was another thing because everyone told me it was a horrible name. But I, again, had a freaking sign and I stuck to it and it was available for me to buy. And so I just did it and it just made sense to me. And so I do things by following my intuition. And so once I get a sign or once I know, I just don't care what anyone else says. And my dad, for sure, he doesn't care what anyone thinks about him. And he's very focused and he just does the same thing every day. Like, I know where he is in the morning. I know where he is in the afternoon and I know where he is in the evening. Like, I just know. And it's nice to have a dad like that. That's really stable. And also at the same time, like risk adverse, and he'll do anything because he believes in himself so much. Like I was telling you, he has never purchased a lottery ticket. He just like believes in himself that much. And he's anything he's ever wanted, he created. And I mean, his situation is different, right? Like he came from nothing and he created everything. Like for me, I had help. I've had support. So I had to move past that because I've been so inspired by his journey that like, I feel like I felt guilt. So I felt guilty that I had help, but I mean, you know, it's different for everyone. For me, maybe I had his help financially and yeah, emotionally in the beginning, but he doesn't understand my business whatsoever. And so as the years have gone on, they don't really get it. But now that things seem to be working out, again, people have a lot of faith in it. But I think it's during those times where it doesn't make sense to people that you really have to have that strength to believe in yourself enough to know that it's going to work. I mean, I don't know. Some things don't work, but I really just believe in it. The other thing is like, you asked me if I knew from the beginning if I wanted to make products. I knew that I wanted to sell products and I knew I wanted my own products eventually, but I didn't know what that was going to be because I just knew about so many products that were out there and I didn't know how I would stand out. And so I knew that I would sell other people's products, which is what I did once I rebranded. And then I opened up a pop-up shop in Laguna, which is how we met. And that was really interesting because I decided I'm going to open this pop-up shop and see what people like. And then I'm going to know what product I'm going to finally create because I'm going to know what works. And that's how I knew that I was going to start the saffron latte because my number one selling product was a turmeric latte online and in store. So that's what inspired me. At the same time, I knew I didn't want to be in the turmeric business because I'm a freak about saffron. So I just knew that there was something out there that was familiar, but not tapped into. And that was like, for me, like the winning ticket was, yeah, creating something that's not out there.
So then how, from that point, did you immediately start working on the saffron latte or did it take some time?
I started working on it right away. So this is 2017. It's like 3 years ago. But I had another girl that was working for me. She was Persian. And so she totally got it too. I mean,
saffron is a
Persian spice.
Yeah.
I mean, you can find it in India and Spain, but it really
really prevalent in the Persian culture, though. Mm-hmm.
So my
mom... What's it used for in the Persian culture?
It's used just for culinary purposes. I mean, back in the day, they used it as an antidepressant, which was what was really cool. I mean, I knew ever since I was a little girl, I knew that it made you laugh. Like, that's what they say. Everyone that's Persian knows that it makes you laugh, but they don't really know like to what extent this spice
do they works. Use it? Do you just know that it makes you laugh, but then you cook with it in food?
Mm-hmm.
Or do people in the Persian culture take it to laugh specifically?
No.
So they it's don't just use like it a side.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a joke made on the side of food because it's used as a spice so often.
Like, I mean, they're just like, oh, that you know, increases libido and that makes you laugh and that makes you feel good.
But I wonder why it's so prevalent.
Yeah.
In the Persian culture.
The temperature, the climate there is perfect for growing saffron. Okay. Yeah, that's why. It's really difficult to grow saffron in California. And there are a couple of people that are doing it. And it's really impressive. They've received like awards and a lot of recognition for it because...
Is it expensive in...
It's expensive all over the world, even there. It's super expensive because of just how much it weighs. Like, I mean, yeah, exactly. The conditions, of course, because harvesting it is super difficult. But then again, it's like the reason it's expensive is because it's compared to weight. Like you're getting a thread for like nothing, for so much money.
Yeah.
And you're getting one little thread. So it's like, yeah, it's really interesting.
So then you knew about saffron and the benefits from kind of from childhood.
From childhood, I knew.
And then you used your culinary background
to finally formulate something. So at the time when all that was happening, like my sister, everyone was making fun of me and they were totally talking shit on me on the side. Like, what is wrong with Nikki? She's like, went to yoga training and then now she's in culinary school. And then she's like traveling with this guy, David Wolf, like this like nutrition guy. But I like traveling with him because I learned a lot about all the different like adaptogens and things like that. And they were just really confused why I was doing all this. And to be honest, I didn't know that it was all going to work out the way it did. But I knew that I needed that education for some reason. And then I like tied it all into my website. And I just love traveling. So we do city guides. I mean, a lot of the content that we have is all based off of my personal interest. Like none of it is based off statistics of what's going to do and perform properly. But it just so happens that I'm kind of like a few steps ahead of the trend. And so at the David Wolf, who I just mentioned, he said something a little while ago that I thought was super interesting. He said, at one of his conferences, he said, like, don't ever be more than 10% ahead of the population in terms of like the things that you do, in terms of business, in terms of all these things. Not that you personally can't be, but when you create something, you want it to still be forward thinking, but accepted. Yeah. So that really stuck to me as well. And that was really great advice, I felt. And I think about that all the time too, whenever I do something, but I think people come to the fullest because they know that we're at the forefront. Like we're not just every single day writing an article about probiotics and like adaptogens, which is great. But like New York Times is writing about that stuff. Like I want to be different. And so that means that, you know, we wrote about psychedelics and like mushrooms helping with anxiety years ago and when no one was writing about it. So I want to write about other stuff. And I'm still going to sprinkle that stuff in because that's what people are now interested in. So I'm always continuing to sprinkle that into our content, but then always elevating the conversation. And so that's how I can bring my personal interests into it without getting bored. I like that's how I stay inspired. It's like if I watch a documentary, then I'm going to want someone to be talking about it because I know that I want other people to learn about it. I know no one's seen it. All sorts of things like that. So right now, that's really how we do content. And then products made sense because I didn't want to rely on advertising because advertisers aren't always in line with our content. And so how am I going to have, you know, like someone, Pfizer, let's say Pfizer, they're like a pharmaceutical company, like being the sponsor for our stuff where they're now starting to sponsor things. It's like, I can't take their money. I can't take a lot of people's money because it's not in alignment. So I knew I had to figure out a different way to monetize so that I could like have control over what I write.
So now that you have the saffron latte and it's being sold in different retail stores and on your website, how do you think about, the content and the fullest and even the events you guys do? Like how have you approached marketing in general? Because like I feel like you have a really great network mm-hmm. that you're connected with. Like I've always watched you connect with all these different people. I wonder, like, where does that come from? Are you naturally like a networker? Or yeah.
And my business partner was really pissed at me one time because she was like, why are you pulling out your business card all the time, like before me? And I was like, no, I'm not trying to do that. I just happen to have my business card. And then I met someone and they seemed cool. Like, I didn't think about it.
Are you intentional about connecting with people?
Yeah, like.
Does it take effort?
No, it definitely doesn't take effort. It's just like, if I think they're cool, then I'll have a conversation.
Do you do it out of admiration? Or is it?
If I admire someone, I'm less likely to connect with them in an authentic way because I'm super nervous.
Yeah.
So no, like that actually prevents me from networking. And
have you used, so you have a different event series that you guys run. Have you used the events as a way to kind of talk about the things that you're interested in, and then also meet people that you have like-minded views with?
I think the events are super important for our brand in terms of growth, to just because I'm not necessarily putting on the events to connect with the panelists. I think the panelists just fit in with our brand. And so either I know them, they're friends, I already know them, I've already networked, and then I ask them to be on it. So that's usually how it goes. Or they ask to be part of it. So it's not a way for me to network with them. It's a way for me to bring people in that might fit into my content. But the events are super important to us because we don't make any money off the events. We are hoping to just continue to break even. Yeah, maybe make a little bit, but barely anything. But I know that it's really important for our marketing strategy because they're just really authentic ways to connect and like bring important information to people. But again, everyone that's there feels that, feels how authentic it is, and they're sharing. And that's important for our brand to grow. Like, we grow a lot every time we do an event, and that's the only time that I would say I notice growth. Otherwise, I really don't comes to our content.
And these are physical events with a small number of people at the actual event, but then they're sharing
They're people that are attending. So that's not just attendees, but it's panelists who do have a great community. But those same panelists we've done stuff with, like we've done a lot of things online with, but the growth that we get from them sharing about the event is way bigger than with them sharing an article that they were in or an article even that they wrote. It's way more authentic.
Do you think that the events have to be connected at all? Like, so when you guys do new products, are you going to, are you thinking about the events like connected to the products at all or not?
Yeah.
Or more that your brand and your products are two different sides of the same person in a way, if the brand was a person?
The event is a way to bring the content and the products to life. So the event merges our two businesses together, but I would say like a new product launch, it wouldn't be like, oh, let's launch our product at this event. Maybe eventually, but I like product launches to be like more intimate. Like I would say a dinner series kind of makes more sense for that. So yeah, it's still an event, but it's like just my friends and we just launch a product versus like a huge, because I don't want the event to be about our product either, because my whole philosophy is that you don't need my product in order to be happy and well. So I'm not going to try and sell you on it at my event. I'm just going to have it there for you to try, because then I think it's salesy and then it's not authentic anymore.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The doing physical events helps grow your digital community so much, and also just like that you feel like that's, I mean, you haven't really talked about the digital aspect of it that much. It's all been physical event focused to even grow the digital side of things. Are you guys going to develop more products?
Yeah, definitely.
And are they all going to be within the same kind of space?
All Saffron for a long time. I don't know forever, but definitely for a long time. Because like you, I know that it's important to stay focused on one thing. And like, I'm doing a million things, but I want those things to still have some sort of focus around it.
Yeah. So you're saying even if the products are within different categories, mm-hmm. they're all still within the same general focus or same space. Mm-hmm. So that creates focus for you.
Mm-hmm.
Your products are sold in retail stores and at cafes and then also on your website. Do you think wholesale and direct to consumer are both like equally important for you? Or do you think one outweighs the other? Not that one should.
I think that direct to consumer is obviously really great. Not just because of the margins, but then also I have a new reader, someone that is now committed and has gone on my website and knows what we're all about. But I think wholesale is definitely the way to go in terms of broadening the brand. So I don't know. I mean, we used to have a print magazine and that was really interesting because we were distributed all over the US and Europe. We were in Barnes & Noble's, Whole Foods, and all across boutiques everywhere in Europe. And it did pretty well in Europe. But the reason we did that is because we wanted people to learn about the website. Everything I do is to get people back to my website, not just to sell them something, but to share the information that I'm actually passionate about.
So the wholesale stuff that you're doing now is still almost like marketing.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the revenue is nice from it, but it's also marketing mm-hmm. to bring people back into your world that you're creating.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is like your area of focus now that you have products and that you're on kind of like a new path? What do you think the most important focus point is for you? And the business?
I'm trying to definitely continue to grow the product line because that is the best and most sustainable way to grow my business. And I know that we have something super unique and I see it really blowing up essentially, but I'm still so committed to the content side of things that I know that before my strategy was the products are essentially going to make it so that the products are going to pay for the content. Content's super expensive. So that's what the plan was originally. But I'm essentially going to make it so the content pays for itself with advertisers. So I'm still bringing on advertisers, but I've done it in a way where I can work with brands that I absolutely love and believe in. And so now that we've grown, I can do that. Before I couldn't. And so the only way I could see myself continue to grow was just by doing products. Whereas now I see both sides of the business have a lot of potential.
It's interesting because your business is almost like most people launch a product and then they have to figure out how to get people to interact with them. Mm-hmm. And your path was interacting with people and finding people to interact with and then later on launching a product when you already have
an
audience coming to you with similar interests.
Yeah.
And now you're just introducing them to things that you guys make in-house as well as other products so that they continue seeing the entire world of your brand.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know if I would have done it that way if it was a different business because I had to sink money into it by making no money. I mean, if you're relying on advertising, you have to be patient and you're not making any money. So like you're sitting there for years figuring out if it's going to work. And so not everyone can do that, but media is expensive, content's expensive, and like, it's just crazy that it happened the way it did. But for my particular product, it was super important that I had that community because no one knows anything about Saffron. So who is going to come listen to me and be as obsessed with my product as I am if I didn't actually have a community to share?
Yeah, you've already vetted people in a way.
Yeah.
Like they have already passed through all these gates for you to know that they're most likely going to be interested in the same things you're interested in because the content's never been built from data or any statistics, and it's all based on your interests. So now, like, the products that you make are probably going to be
something they buy
as long as you actually like and believe in the product.
Yeah. So that's the only way it worked. But I don't know. I mean, if I were to start...
It's almost like the strategy in the beginning was not... I don't mean this in a bad way. I mean it in a good way. Like, the strategy in the beginning is not to have a strategy and to find...
what works.
Or like, yeah, to discover what you're doing along the way.
Yeah, and like, no one can do that, really, unless they have someone as crazy as my dad to just like believe that they're gonna make it work. But it's stressful. I mean, like, having someone in your family, it's like a different level of stress.
I don't think that really matters. It's almost worse.
It is, because every single day.
Because, like, you see your investor, this is what I think, you see your investor all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, other people don't.
Yeah.
They don't go to, like, a family dinner with their investor.
Every night.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is really intense. It's a lot of pressure, especially if it's a family member you really love and care about. Like, it's not like...
So I almost view it that your, like, confidence and also, your, like, confidence and drive is, like, more interesting because you have to, I'd imagine, like, butt heads with the person that you're closest with in the times of doubt, which is obviously not that fun.
No. Yeah. I mean, luckily, like, it's only been a few times that's had to happen for me where I've really had to prove myself. And we had my dad's CFO. It was really good because my dad's CFO is like someone who held me accountable and like I would share my strategies and stuff with. So I had like some sort of third party, whereas my dad is just super nice. And so he would feel bad, but he would have that the CFO is who's been the person that can really like go at it with me. And I prove myself to that person. But now I don't feel I need to prove myself at all because we are on a really great path of just proving, I mean, just like really surprising ourselves with what is possible with where we're at.
And what are you excited for? Like, what can people look out for this year with the fullest, both from the products and?
Definitely new products, but really just the content and our new website is just going to really explain everything that we are in just a more straightforward way. I think right now it's a little bit outdated and it isn't encompassing of the world that we're creating.
And then what events are you guys?
Yeah, so we have an event series called Unwell that we hosted last year. We hosted two of last year and we're hosting four this year. In the US and internationally in London. So we're really excited to go to London. I mean, with the magazine, we were there. So we do have a following in Europe, but now we're going to be able to actually interact with them in person. And then products. I mean, I'm really excited about products because I think it's just another way to be part of our brand. I mean, I have a podcast, we have the content in terms of articles. And then we have print that people continue to buy, and because that's timeless. So it's just another way to like be and live your fullest life, because that's essentially what we're selling here.
Red Receipt is a podcast by Antidote. End-to-end email and SMS marketing that sells more. Did you know the average ROI for email marketing is 4,300%? What we do and say every day counts more. Elevate your brand to a higher state through beautiful and effective email and SMS marketing. We handle it all. Strategy, copywriting, design, and reporting. Delivering world-class results without breaking the bank. We're an extension of your team. Extended family, really. You can find us at www.antidote.email and email us at hi@antidote.email. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Red Receipt.